SMQBs, this is episode 178. Brewster, let's get started. Who are you bringing to the bar this week?
I am bringing an oldie but goodie, James Dolan. I'm going to take him to the bar. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to punch him. Then I'm going to pick him back up and put him on his bar stool and tell him that now that Daniel Snyder is out of sports, he has a serious chance to be the record holder for punchable faces of the week. And I'm just going to ask him if he's interested in continuing to try.
I like it. All right. Milt, what about you?
Well, I brought him to the bar a few weeks ago. I think I'm going to do it again. Bring in Billy Napier. College football has started.
A little pep talk
before Miami on Saturday. And I want an assurance from him that if he loses that game, he will resign as head coach. So that's where I'm at with him.
You may have created a ugly situation for yourself with some of the taunting you did of your Florida State friends.
I may have gone a little over the edge.
All right.
They're going to get me back.
Yeah.
Sticking with the punchable owner theme, if he can still make his way to the bar, 88-year-old Jerry Reinsdorf, who his estimated net worth is something like $2.1 billion, can you please buy these poor fans of Chicago White Sox players for your team? They have set a record for the earliest to lose 100 games in Major League Baseball history. And I had to scratch my head for a second, ask myself, well, who's the owner again? And when I was reminded it was Jerry Reinsdorf, I could not believe it. I cannot believe that guy can't field a competitive team. I really hope for those fans they turn around.
Good luck.
So I'm going to bring one Danny Jansen.
Oh, yeah.
Danny Jansen is not only the first player to play for two teams, opposing teams, in the same major league game, but he actually did it in the same inning. So what happened today was Danny Jansen, who played for the Blue Jays, he got up at bat in a game, several weeks ago, and fouled a ball off. That was his at bat. And as soon as the foul ball, was over, they brought the tarps out. Game gets postponed, rescheduled for today. Lo and behold, he gets traded from the Blue Jays to the Red Sox. And today is the makeup part of that game. So he goes, he's behind the plate when his replacement, Dalton Varsho, comes up. Varsho strikes out in his plate appearance. And then at that time, the guy who was on first base actually stole second, on Jansen. So this guy, Danny Jansen, now is the only player in Major League Baseball history to play for both teams in the same game, and he managed to do it in the same inning also.
Hard to imagine that ever happens again.
Like, yeah, that's pretty wild, right? All right, guys, what we got going on this week? It's a lot of stuff happening. Milk, you let off a little college football there. Take it away.
Well, hey, look, we're back. And it came back with a splash. I'm very excited about the results on Saturday. I know you guys
are breaking news, DJ Ugalele still sucks.
He's shocking. Hell of a game. Florida State got pounded. They got ran over. And I want to focus on this game real quick because I think it's important. And it gets into the transfer portal a little bit. There's a lot of talk about Florida State this year. This was going to be their redemption year after they cried all in the offseason about getting left off out of the playoffs. And their coach has, Norvell came in and basically said, I'm going to use the transfer portal to be a successful college football team. And I think what this weekend showed you is that the transfer portal, and this is, we all have our thoughts on the transfer portal, but I don't really see a lot of positives with it. I saw a team that tried to replace all of their players through the transfer portal this year with They brought in Roydell Williams to be their running back from Bama. They brought in Malik Benson to be their starting wide receiver from Bama. Probably spent a lot of money to get these guys over. Yuka gonna need a new job soon from Oregon State. They brought him in. They brought in Marvin Jones from Bama as well, from Georgia to be on their defensive line. None of it mattered. None of it helped. All of those players highly underperformed. Jones on the D-line, I think their entire D-line had a half tackle for a loss in that game. They got ran over. They were completely dominated up front. And I saw a team in Florida State that looked confused. They looked like a team exactly who was built from the transfer portal, who had not played a game together, who had there was no rhythm. And it was the exact opposite of what I saw in Georgia Tech, who had all of their O-line basically coming back from last year. Haynes King, they highly recruited. Now, he did transfer over from A&M last year, but he had a year at Georgia Tech, or 2 years ago. He was at Georgia Tech last year. Jamal Haynes, who ran for, over 100 yards, I think, two touchdowns against Florida State. They looked in sync. They had a rhythm to each other. King looked poised as their quarterback. And, I mean, they beat the shit out of Florida State in the trenches. And it showed, and honestly, I know it was close. It was a three-point game. But if Florida State's kicker doesn't hit a 59-yard field goal and a 52-yard field goal, it's really, I mean, they lose by 9 or 10 points, a top 10 team against a 7-6 team last year. So I think it's, we hear Prime loves the transfer portal. Look what happened to him last year, 4 wins. I think they're going to could be even worse this year. He's not going to talk to the media anymore, but whatever. I just showed to me that you got to recruit within, you've got to build these programs, and you cannot just rely on bringing in these players from other programs to plug these holes every time. Florida State, I understand, lost a lot of people, but that's just what it showed me. I mean, did you guys see the same thing they just looked completely confused to me when we watched that game. And I think a lot of that had to do with the transfer portal. And I think there's some problems with it.
I think what you're saying underscores an even larger point that it's really hard to watch college football develop a program of teams that have sustained success. Now, having said that, sure, you have SEC powerhouses like Georgia and Alabama, but from 1 year to the next, even those teams are different. How do you have a team in Florida State who, what were they, 14-0, 13-1, whatever, and Norvell and the whole world, there was a half this country was crying about them being the ones left out of the playoff. How can you go from that 7 months ago to a team that arguably had a really good shot to be in the finals of college football last year, to a team that cannot even hold their own on a field with Georgia Tech?
Yeah, the redemption tour didn't exactly get off to a hot start for FSU, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
4 hours. But you know, they had Jordan Travis last year. Jordan, until he got hurt, Jordan Travis had been at Florida State for years. He was a well-established QB there, had a lot of experience, had been with Norvell for a couple of years last year. I don't know. This whole thing of going, we're going to get these guys, we're going to plug here, he left the NFL, let's bring in blah, blah, blah from Oregon State. I'm not sure how successful the transfer portal has been. It's this hyped thing, this great thing. We can go get all these players. I just don't see it as a benefit. And everybody who is, if you look at the rankings, they do transfer portal rankings now. These teams like Colorado and Florida State that are top 5 or whatever, I just see problems. And they seem to under deliver every time. Just, you've got to recruit within. Bama and Georgia, because players want to go there. They have the top recruiting classes every year, and they keep those players mostly. Bama lost guys when Saban left, which of course was going to happen. But it's you've got to build a program from within. And so congratulations to Georgia Tech, because that was a hell of a win. And
you got to note that the game was in Ireland, and ooh, that's a rough flight home to lose that game for the Florida State fans who thought they were going over to start their coronation season, to lose that. I mean, that's rough. I would hate to lose a big game and have to get on like a red eye flight home from, the Super Bowl or something like that. That would be tight. That would be tough. Does anybody experience that?
Milk, we probably spent 10 minutes more on Florida State than we ever should have ever in this pod. Yeah. So let me ask you this. Does anybody run with Georgia this year?
I mean, I would go to Oregon. I mean, Oregon is really good. They've got Dillon Gabriel at quarterback, who I loved him when he was at UCF. He was at Oklahoma last year. Now talk about here I go with the transfer.
Here you go with the transfer.
Here you go, the transfer.
Now he's over at Oregon. Although,
difference is he's not DJ Uiagalelei. That's right. The main difference.
He's not DJ.
Well, I think though, don't we have to start with the biggest thing this year? I mean, the biggest story this year. I guess putting aside Saban not being there on the sideline, but this is a 12-team playoff season, right? I mean, this is when it starts. We're finally getting a real playoff this year.
Yeah, let me ask you guys this burning question. What are the chances that of Pope's many, many favorite college football teams, that SMU turns out to have the best year?
We know after Saturday that
that's not happening.
You're asking the wrong people.
Yeah, that's not happening.
28-point favorite and almost lost to a hopeless, hapless Nevada team. And I think they ended up winning by like 6 or 7 points. So I think they're going to be a disappointment. Yeah, I mean, look.
So
I think
you're telling me he's a Longhorns fan this year.
Yeah, you got it.
It's close. We'll see what happens with Bama. He's watching that situation very, very closely. But look, you got 12 teams. Everybody wanted this. There's not as much emphasis on a loss anymore. It really opens the window to. I mean, there's going to be probably some 2-loss teams that get in. I think of course Nace, what will Kalen DeBoer do at Bama as the new coach? What will he do with Jalen Milroe after what we saw him do with Penix? And so I think I'm not putting the lid on Bama's coffin and by any means. I mean, they could be just as good as they were last year. We'll see how important Saban was to that culture and coaching. Again, I love Oregon. I think Ohio State is going to be solid. Brewster, you saw him play last year. One of the best defenses in the country that I think got better. They brought in Kalen Downs from Bama to even strengthen their secondary.
Who's their quarterback this year?
I love their quarterback, Will Howard, who was at Kansas State last year. I watched a couple of their games. He's really good.
Yeah, because last year their quarterback kind of held him back. He was really good. I think I commented after the Penn State game that I went to. He was really good between the 35s and then seemed to choke in the red zone.
Yeah. No, I think they have a huge upgrade there.
I think let's note that the way that the playoff field is going to be set, right? Well, all I know is that the top 4 ranked conference champions get in as the 1-4 seed. And then a fifth conference champion always gets in, but will also get it. How's the rest of the field get selected? Does anyone know?
No, I think the rest of the teams get selected based on rankings, and a G5 team has reserved one slot. So I looked ahead on this, the December 20th through 21st, there's a first round of the playoffs, and those games are played at the higher seeded home team. I actually think that's going to be a really fun weekend of college football, because those are not neutral site games. Those are going to be real fun playoff games where there should be a home field advantage. And then after that, the quarters, the semis, and the finals are all, well, the quarters and the semis are all aligned with bowl sites. So this year, the quarters, which are New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, are Fiesta, Peach, Rose, and Sugar. The semis, which are January 9th and 10th, are the Orange and Cotton. And then the January 20th is the championship game, which I didn't look to see which. I guess that's New Orleans. Maybe not. I'm not sure. Actually, I'm not sure where the actual final is January 20th. But that's how the playoff system works. And I'm pretty sure after the top five, it goes to rankings.
Let me ask you guys this. Who is your surprise number 12 team in the playoffs? Who squeaks in?
Well, the 12 seed is going to go to one of the G5 teams, which, you know, it's going to be somebody like this year, Boise State, Memphis, Tulane is a possibility.
Mine is Liberty University.
Liberty could be. But yeah, Liberty could be.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which would be weird.
Interesting.
I like Memphis and Boise State. I think, I don't know if they'll be a 12th. I think Tennessee's going to surprise people. I really like Missouri as well. I know I'm SEC biased here, but you know, they quietly won 11 games last year. No one remembers. And they have Brady Cook, who's really one of the best quarterbacks in the country. So keep an eye on them. But I could see at Memphis, their defense is terrible, but Seth Hennigan, their quarterback, is solid. They were a 10-win team last year. I don't know about Boise State. I do know that they had they were going to go with a five-star from USC, and I guess they announced today that he was not the starting quarterback. So that was kind of a shocking move there.
So Milton,
I think Ole Miss is going to be good too. Watch out for Lane.
You mentioned the SEC. I mean, help this less than interested college football fan understand where we are on conferences at this point, because how many conferences are there? What are they all broken up? I mean, where do we stand? I mean, what's happening?
Yeah. So you've got Texas and OU now in the SEC. By the way, Quinn Ewers, one of the best quarterbacks of the country. Watch. The problem with the SEC is they all play each other. So it's just a bashing of, it's hard for any one of those teams to go undefeated. You know, and the Big Ten now is completely just as a completely new look. You know, USC and UCLA and God, where is Arizona?
Stanford.
Yeah. Big 12 is who stayed there? Utah, I think, is the front runner coming out of there. By the way, they still have Cam Rising as quarterback, who's now in his 10th year in college football. Watch out for them. Yeah, I mean, it's your worst nightmare, Nace. The mega conferences have formed, and here we are. It's basically four big conferences.
Can we say something about Nace's favorite college football team? Because there's big news there. Nace's favorite college football team has Rooster's most hated coach. The Boston College Eagles have hired for this year Bill O'Brien as their coach.
Ooh.
You know, you guys give Nace a hard time about Boston College every football season. I'm the one who started saying that I liked it when Boston College and Notre Dame were good. Not Nace.
Thank you, Rooster.
You keep bashing him for that.
No. And I'll stick to that anyway, though. It's better when Boston College.
Huge test this weekend at Florida State.
With Bill O'Brien.
O'Brien was a good college coach, right? Wasn't he the guy who came in and sort of righted the ship a little bit at Penn State. All the Paterno stuff?
He's a good position coach. He's not a good head coach.
I'm interested to see how, you know, it's crazy. We had two teams in the national championship last year, Michigan and Washington, neither of whom have their head coach from last year, which is pretty wild.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know,
plenty of people.
They did. But Sherrone Moore taking over the coaching job at Michigan will be interesting. And the guy who moved over from Arizona, who turned around that program, Jed Fish, has gone to Washington. I think Washington's in a world of hurt. They lost so many people. I think they're going to drop off like big time.
Big time. I totally agree.
What are the big games this weekend? I mean, this is really the big opening weekend, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is week one. Well, for me, it's Florida-Miami. I know that's not for anyone else. I don't know. What are the – I didn't really look at the
– I mean, there's not really a lot of mark. Most of the ranked teams are opening up against patsies. Now, Georgia is that quasi-neutral site. I guess they're playing in Atlanta. Georgia's playing home against Clemson. That's again an overranked. I'm not even sure that Clemson's worthy of the number 14 rank. I think Penn State, it's a tough place to go into play in West Virginia. Even though West Virginia's down, that's a tough place. It'll be interesting. I don't know if this Drew Allar kid, you know, he was the number one quarterback recruit in the country. They don't normally go to Penn State. They did last year. He was pretty decent, but he needs to really turn it on this year. So that will be a fun game to watch, that Penn State West Virginia game this weekend.
What about Notre Dame Texas A&M? That's a pretty good matchup, isn't it?
That's a good one. Yeah, I like that. And you got USC at LSU, I think, on Sunday. And then, so that'll be a good game, too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I really like LSU this year. And then
that was in Vegas. That's got Allegiant in Vegas.
But yeah, that's right, it is. Yeah, so, I mean, week one, it's usually a little bit more down the road. Some of the bigger games start to come.
You got a couple games worth watching in there.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And Florida Miami will be a fun game.
Maybe somebody's getting fired from that game.
Do you guys believe the hype on Shedeur Sanders?
No.
I mean, people talking about him being like a top five NFL pick, and then he's the greatest thing. Yeah, I'm serious. I'm not buying it.
I think this could be a total, like, absolute one of the worst seasons ever. I mean, he's now what is he doing now? He's cut the media off. He won't talk to them.
Some of the media.
Some of the media.
One guy. I mean, Shedeur Sanders. I went to a game last year. He has moments where he looks like Caleb Williams, mm-hmm. where he's doing a reverse pivot under pressure, scrambles away, and throws across his body in the wrong direction and throws a dart. He has skills, but I think he's overrated. And he's – hold on a sec. I think he's overrated, and he's physically nimble. I mean, brittle. He's built like a stick figure.
I just – the I don't know. I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling the vibe, the culture there. I just, it seems like it's going to be more of that team that we saw in the second half of the year, that the team that imploded against Stanford in the second half, team that went to Oregon and lost by, what was it, 50? I don't see them doing much at all. And I think Prime's a lot to blame for that.
Yep.
Well, we'll see.
All right. Well, anything else on college?
I'm excited to watch Milk lose his coach.
Here we go. Race.
Well, I will be angrier and angrier as the season progresses. I'm warning you.
Coach Slingblade. I call him Coach Slingblade. He looks like he cuts his own hair with an axe.
He loses this game, I am just Monday. Reserve a few minutes for me, please. Because I'm going to go on a rant.
All right, let's talk a little fantasy football. I'm going to give you my advice right out of the gate. It's really always nice when you find out that your first round pick is under contract and has a team. So thankful that worked out today. Thank you, Cowboys, for that. But let's jump into it. House, why don't you lead us off on a little fantasy talk?
Look, for those of you folks who are still yet to make your picks, in your fantasy league. Everything depends on the scoring system, of course. So obviously, if you're in a PPR 1 point or half point PPR league, you know, it's so much about the throws you get, more so even than, of course, the touchdowns or the yards. So you're going to be a wide receiver heavy draft. But I have to say, we just conducted our, you know, SMQBs plus some other guys. We just conducted our draft this past weekend, and slowly but surely, I'm getting drawn to Milk's theory of holding off to the last possible minute to draft a quarterback.
Oh, wow. Wow. Was it the two rings that started to...
I followed that advice, Milk.
I did too. When I heard somebody make an announcement in like the 10th or 11th round that they were drafting Tua, I was like, what was I doing drafting a quarterback so much earlier? I could have gotten two in the 10th or 11th.
I'm so mad at myself for going Anthony Richardson in the 6th. I'm going to lose a league now because I went against my advice.
If Tyreek Hill is a top 3 or 4 pick, someone has to throw him the ball. Like, how can you short Tua so much that he doesn't go till that late in the draft? So I don't know. I think from a drafting strategy, I think just one thing, I will adopt the Milk strategy that says, hold your powder and don't draft. It's tempting. You're going to see Mahomes' name there and all that other stuff, but Tua's numbers were pretty damn gaudy, and you'll probably be able to get him late. The other thing is running backs. I saw a lot of teams make the mistake this weekend, their draft. If your running back is not pretty close to the exclusive carrier of the ball, you cannot draft a split backfield running back.
Does that really exist where you have really one back? These offenses are so diverse. They have guys who have specialty plays almost.
I mean, I think at first I laughed at it a little bit, but Pope took Breece Hall with the number 2 pick overall right after Christian McCaffrey. Breece Hall is going to get a ton of carries for that team, in part to protect Aaron Rodgers, in part because he's a very good running back. You know, I drafted a guy that I think is going to get 80% of the carries in Las Vegas, Zamir White. He came on to have a very good year. Even the other guy I got from, you know, Milk's squad, the Bucks, Rashad White gets a ton of the carries. Nobody else really gets the ball there.
Well, I don't know. They have a rookie who may come on strong, right, Milk? Bucky, what is it? Bucky Irving?
Bucky.
Yeah.
No, do I need to worry about Bucky Irving?
From Oregon. He's good.
You should have looked into that.
I almost drafted him with my last pick.
Oh, God.
Good pick with Rashad White. Dude, he scored a touchdown on the first drive last week. So don't. It's Rashad White's fine.
Here's the other thing, House, you should tell our listeners is our league is a standard league. It's not a PPR league.
Right.
So running backs have a little bit more value in our league than in PPR leagues.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't take Breece Hall number 2 in a PPR league.
No.
You can't, obviously.
The other thing is, you know, every time I start to think formulaically, like this year, where I'm like, I'm just taking two wide receivers right out of the gate, period. Yeah, I second guess myself afterwards because there are a slew of really good wide receivers in this year's draft. There are a lot of great wide receivers, and there are guys that didn't go drafted who could have great years, like Roma Dunze in our draft. On the other hand, there aren't that many great running back picks. No. So you're right. If you can get a Bijan Robinson who's going to catch a ton of passes this year, maybe you do take him high because there aren't many of them.
Go, Milk.
No, I was going to agree. I think it's there's like three every year. There's three running backs, right? There's the top three running backs. take him in the first four or five picks. After that, the drop off becomes so significant, in my opinion. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe this. Maybe Saquon Barkley will blow up under in Philadelphia.
But he went pretty early. He was an early value, pick, wasn't he?
He went.
Yeah, he went in the first round. He went seventh.
Yeah, seventh.
And so that's fine. I would like to have seen which wide receivers were available, but yeah, I mean,
Jefferson was still available. Justin Jefferson.
Justin Jefferson went way too late, in my opinion.
Yeah, why? But who's throwing him the ball?
That was the Sam Darnold effect, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's Sam Darnold. It's not like he's the worst quarterback in the world.
Oh, really? No. Who's worse?
Daniel Jones.
Oh, there you go. Okay, fair.
Daniel Jones for sure.
Otherwise, Malik Nabers may have been a first-round pick.
I
exaggerate there, but still.
Do any of you guys subscribe to the irrational drafting strategy of refusing to draft an actual opponent for your real life football team? Because I can't take a Dallas Cowboy because of that. The only exception is the kicker. I was willing to take Brandon Aubrey because he doesn't miss, but and now he'll probably break his leg in week one. But I can't. I mean, if CeeDee Lamb. Or, I don't know how many Cowboys you draft anymore, but Dak, any of those guys, but you guys did both of them. I cannot believe that a Commanders fan took CeeDee Lamb and a Giants fan took Dak Prescott. I almost fainted.
And I took Eagles defense too.
I'm rooting for Dallas to lose every game in a huge high scoring shootout.
Yeah. I mean, this is business. House, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
I know.
Well, I think Pope, I don't know, I guess it's debatable. He passed on CeeDee at two and he went three.
Breece Hall. Yeah. He took Breece Hall at two and CeeDee went at three.
Maybe. I don't know. A lot of hype for the Jets.
I don't think Aaron Judge makes it past the third game of the season.
Aaron Rodgers.
I keep calling him Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge?
This is the second week in a row I've called him Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge is going to forgive you for that.
Well, Rooster, we'll talk about the Yankees, man. Relax.
He'll go from four plays last year to three games this year.
Who's the backup?
I have no idea.
No idea.
Not Zach Wilson.
They have a chance of getting White back. You just got cut by someone.
You appreciate when you're doing these fantasy drafts, guys. Like it exactly what Rooster just said. When you say, "I'm going to be disciplined. I'm going to go with wide receivers," and then you're there in the moment, and you panic, and you think, like, "Okay, this is just fantasy with just the guys like making picks." In the real world, when you are a GM of an NFL team and you have a draft board. And you say, that is our board. How tempting it must be when all of a sudden a guy that you didn't think was going to be on the draft board is all of a sudden available.
Yeah.
And how that can change the fate of your football team. Because I think it just changed the fate of some of our fantasy football team this weekend.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on fantasy? Let's wrap that up. What do we got to move into? What in the actual fuck is happening at kickoffs? In the NFL. Can somebody please explain this? I see you came with charts and graphs, House, so maybe you can help us out.
Please, what House, tell us.
Do you guys I had to take a course. Did you guys understand this yet?
Are you certified now?
The incentive is to have more kick returns. And so what's the penalty for kicking the ball into the end zone?
So the penalty is the yardage where the ball starts. So listeners, I know if you're always on Spotify or Apple, this might be one of those times where at this point you flip over to the YouTube and you see the chart that's behind me, because graphically it helps to explain it. The kickoff happens from the kicking team's own 35, but the kicking team players,
the coverage team
start on the opponent's 40, and the receiving team blockers are between the 30 and the 35. They're trying to enhance safety and reduce the collision speed at which, you know, the coverage and the running receiving team is going at each other. So there's a scrum that occurs at the middle of the field between the 40-yard line of the receiving team and the 30 to 35. So that's part of the rule that
they basically reduced the kick return to a run play.
Well, also, and when can they start moving?
Well, no one can move until the ball lands or is caught by a player. Now, the kicking team has some motivation to land the ball in what's called the landing zone, which is the 0 to 20-yard line. If the ball lands, if the kicker is trying to really get that short kick to like the 18 and you could just nail him right there, but if somehow the kicker screws it up and it lands on the 21, okay, the ball starts at the 40-yard line. So I think kickers are, you're going to see deeper kicks. I just do. I don't think they're going to play around with that 10 to 20 yard line area. Cause if that's short, then the ball comes out at the 40. If it lands in the end zone,
player 30, right?
Right. The player can either return it or you just get it on your own 30. There is no such thing anymore as a fair catch in the field of play. So if the ball rolls from the landing zone and then downs into the end zone, you just get it to 20. So you're incentivized to catch the ball and do something with it. So basically, you can get it at the 20, the 30, or the 40. The 40 really only happens on out of bounds plays, like, you know, like it used to happen, like if you kick the ball out of bounds or if it doesn't reach it to the 20-yard line. The 30 is if the ball lands in the end zone, basically a touchback is now out to the 30. So that's really how it works.
Here's my prediction. I've watched a few preseason games, and it seems to me that it's fairly likely that a ball kicked into the landing zone and fielded by the returner is going to be returned to the 30 at least. They've been consistently getting to the 25, 30-yard line. And so what you're going to see is the same thing that happened all last year and the year before and the year before, is the kicker's just going to say, I'm not taking any risks of not landing it in the zone. I'm just going to blast it through the end zone and put the ball in the 30 and let's go. And so it's not going to result in more returns.
But there's a worse rule in with kicking than this, not just this dumb new landing zone, all this. I don't know if you guys have heard how dumb the new rules are on the onside kick. It's basically done. First of all, you have to declare it. There's no surprise. There's no such thing as a surprise onside kick anymore. By the way, you can't do an onside kick if you're leading the game. By the way, you can't do an onside kick in the first, second, or third quarter. So one, you have to declare it. Two, you have to be trailing. And three, you can only do it in the fourth quarter.
Can you declare it and then kick it long?
In the third, you can't do an onside kick?
Nope. Only in the fourth quarter.
There was literally a Super Bowl that was won doing this.
Yeah.
The Saints, correct?
Yeah. And there was also another one that almost got the Titans, right? Almost won one.
Right. The Saints did the onside kick to start the second half, right?
Start the second half and got it.
That's great. That's a great strategy. Catch a team off guard. Isn't that what football is supposed to be about? Can you outsmart?
Why did they do that? This is not a safety issue. What is this? Why did they do this? It's a safety issue with an all.
I have no idea.
This is the stupidest thing ever.
Why?
Told you.
Well, I think part of the problem was once you move the ball to the 35 and the players to the 40, you had to do something to change the way an onside kick would work, right?
And true.
And you guys know when you're sitting in the stands at a game or even watching on TV and you're screaming, wait a second, the play clock expired? I feel like that happens all the time. That is now newly a reviewable play as to whether or not the play clock expired before the ball was
like that.
I do too. And the other one, which I was surprised to hear is new, was not reviewable before, but I did not know that whether the passer was down or out of bounds before he threw the pass, like was the quarterback actually down before he threw the pass or was he out of bounds? That was not reviewable before. That is important. And that is now reviewable. That's a huge thing, whether or not the quarterback's down. So look for those replays. Those are good new rules.
Interesting.
All right. Anything else we got to talk on NFL rules? Of course, next week we'll talk all NFL next Monday, right? We'll jump real into it. All right. Hey, who's got a punchable face? Don't call it a
comeback. I have one. We touched on this earlier. You know, I'm a Buffs fan. My son went there. I was initially all on board with the Deion Sanders regime. But I have to punch old Deion and the University of Colorado Boulder now, because this whole ridiculousness where he holds a press conference and calls out a reporter, and then they basically announce a policy that they are going to refuse to take any questions from this reporter from the Denver Post named Sean Keeler, because poor Deion's feelings are hurt that Sean Keeler has been critical of him. Apparently the media relations staff at Colorado don't like it either. So they've announced that Sean Keeler, who has press credentials, can come to all of the press conferences, but they will not be entertaining any questions from him, because he has said things in the Denver Post about Deion's calling him deposition Deion, the Bruce Lee of bullshit, false prophet, Planet Prime, and referred to the Deion Kool-Aid that all of the fans are and members of the Colorado Boulder community have been drinking. I don't think he's wrong, and frankly, he has every right to say this stuff. And you know, grow a spine. Don't be so such a damn baby.
It is so weak. It's so weak of Colorado and Deion.
It's embarrassing.
Pathetic. Yeah,
embarrassing.
Get it? Was totally he like this as a player? Why is he? I thought he wasn't defensive like this. I thought he's like, bring it.
He's a baby now, and it's he needs to be punched and get his senses back. This is really embarrassing.
Don't worry, they're gonna get punched this year. Big
I think you're right, Milk. Any other punches?
Can I give a milk slap that may turn into a punch?
Yeah.
I told you guys at least one of the people on here was not going to be happy about this. I am already annoyed by Tom Brady. I am already annoyed by this guy.
Dude, he's rent-free in your head.
Milk, enough with this BS. Like, maybe I won't retire. Maybe I'll come back and play for somebody. If the right situation presented itself, maybe I still will play football. Dude, go in the broadcasting booth. Do what maybe you'll be good at. Shut up. Leave the game behind. And the other thing, he's already, I don't know if you've heard this whole thing about, you know, all this complaints about quarterbacks shouldn't start in their first year, and you know, you have to learn a system, and I sat on the sidelines and I learned things. Like, he's already doing this baby stuff. Like, dude, watch the game, appreciate what it is now. Stop saying that you're going to play and receive the back of my hand for your slap, and it will be closed to a fist if you keep this going.
You know who else is annoying already in the booth is Satan, Nick Saban.
I haven't heard him yet. Is he bad?
I saw him on College Game Day, and they were asking him all kinds of questions about how the change was for him and all that, and he refers to himself as "we" the whole time he's answering questions. The royal "we." It's like, dude, you are not that important. Don't call yourself
about,
"we."
Wasn't he talking about the school, Alabama, the program?
No, he was talking about himself as "we."
Oh,
what?
That's
by the way. Was
you know, Pat like he's the queen. He's the queen.
Was he drunk on air? I didn't watch Game Day.
No, that McCaffrey was. Yes, McCaffrey. So you get this
McAfee,
you know, this,
yeah.
get this pompous nonsense from Saban, and then McAfee is the next one, and they're like, "Hey, how was last night?" He said, "I had 30 Guinness last night." And it was hammered.
Oh boy. That's gonna go well. Season. Yeah. This should go well. Nothing can work. And I'm sure there won't be any problems there on that chemistry.
There was a lot of people were hammered Saturday morning, I'll tell you that much.
All right, any other punches? Who's got a lasso?
sauce.
I have lasso. Do you have a lasso too? I can't tell based on your picture you have one. Chris.
Only if someone else isn't doing it.
I'll let you do it, and then I'll cover the other ones. The first lasso is the most obvious one. We at the SMQBs are thrilled that Ted Lasso is coming back for season 4 for more feel-good stories, and we are glad that the show is so impressed at our Lasso segment that they decide to run it back. So thank you guys for supporting us. The other one is, why should we talk about the fact that a Washington Commander player, 32-year-old Martavis Bryant, scored a touchdown in a preseason football game? I was wondering, why the hell is this news? And then I was kind of reminded about the story. If this isn't a lasso, I don't know what is.
Good story. Yep.
This guy, it's the first time he's caught a touchdown in 6 seasons. Why? Because he's been out of the NFL all of that time. He was a major standout at Clemson, like in the same sentence of D-Hop. Like,
yeah, this sounds familiar.
Right?
Didn't he go to the Steelers?
He went to the Steelers.
Yeah. I remember this guy.
The first 2 seasons, he's 76 receptions, 1,300 yards. Yeah. He looks like he's going to be the real deal. Okay. In the days of the NFL when pot mattered, that wasn't a good thing. He got banned for 5 games in his second year of NFL for 5 games, comes back, gets a repeat violation in 2016, longer ban. And then in 2018, when he's on the Oakland Raiders, he gets a third ban and is suspended indefinitely, kicked out of football. The only way you can come back into football is applying for reinstatement. Here's who he played with in between on his way back: the Toronto Argonauts, the Massachusetts Pirates, the Edmonton Elks, the fantasy-controlled football, or the fan-controlled football Beasts. Remember that fan-controlled football where you assign the plays? He was a wide receiver in fan-controlled football. The Vegas Vipers. And now he applied for reinstatement in 2023. He got reinstatement. Washington realized they don't really have kind of the size that they would like. This guy's a really big, tall receiver, and he still has some speed. And 32 years old, he's back with the team. I think he's got a reasonable chance to make it. He's cleaned himself up. He has no substance abuse problems, and he catches a touchdown from Trace McSorley in the preseason game yesterday. And I just thought that's a cool story. 99.9% of people would say, I'm done. Like, I can't make it back anymore. This guy was playing fan-controlled football and just kept it going. And what was kind of cool is the people that kept him going and inviting him to come play and train with them. Deebo Samuel, DeAndre Hopkins, Saquon Barkley said, don't give up, come train with us. That's a cool story.
Yeah, and I've heard a couple interviews with him, and he's saying all the right things. You know, he seems like he's really keeping his head down, thankful for the opportunity. Just sounds like a guy who, you know, is really grateful for the chance, and hopefully he makes something of it. Hopefully he makes the team. Yeah,
Dan Snyder would have totally cut him. Thank God he's gone.
That's true. Yeah, oh yeah, true. For sure.
Now he could be an ambassador to the Olympics.
There you go.
All right. Well, my lasso is milk. You know, the Florida Gators may not do anything this year. You may not have anything to root for there, but you can always be proud of the very first Little League World Series championship team from Florida, Lake Mary, who defeated Taiwan 2-1 in 8 innings on a walk-off bunt and an error. And I'll tell you, I think it was 1-0 Taiwan through most of the game.
Awesome.
They had a pretty early RBI single, and then the pitching was just dominant. The Florida tied it up, I guess, in the 6th inning, I think, is when they tied it up. And so it goes into extra innings. And, you know, it's a great story the way they hung in there, and won. But you got to give the kid credit because it was meant to be a sack bunt, and it was a perfectly executed sacrifice bunt. I mean, it was perfect. Now, you know, a little disappointed for Taiwan because the way the game ended was nobody was covering first. So the pitcher fielded the ball and launched it to first to get the out, and there was nobody covering. And so that's how the game ended. But you got to give them credit. I mean, that those are the fundamentals of baseball. They dropped down the perfect bunt, and Florida, for the first time ever, is the Little League World Series champion.
0-8 before
that. That shocked me that Florida didn't. Yeah.
We've had some Tampa teams that have really, like MLB, got Sheffield and all those guys were on it.
Yeah, it's a good story. So congrats to Lake Mary. Yeah.
By the way, I watched the highlights with my kids last night, and it is amazing like how good these kids are.
Yes.
If you go back and watch the Little League World Series probably 20, 30 years ago compared to now, I mean, the Taiwanese shortstop, by the way, was like turn double plays. Like, and the Florida shortstop, they were both unbelievable.
That sliding play where he did the spin move and then gunned him out at first for the kid from Florida.
That was unbelievable. It's like MLB talent. Like, it was crazy. These kids are good. Very good.
Any more lassos? All right, he's got a buzzer beater.
I've got a couple. Have you guys heard some of these stories about Jerry West being all, before he died, all pissed off about the comments from younger basketball players and fans about how guys in his era just were playing against plumbers and all that? And
yeah.
One of the things he said that I thought was funny was he said, I keep hearing everyone saying so-and-so is a real dog. He's a dog. He said, you know what? I was a wolf. I used to eat the dogs. I was so good when I played. And I'm reminded of that story now in the context of the WNBA, where Caitlin Clark comes out, and there clearly was an effort to bully her by a lot of the teams. And, you know, she's a scrawny looking woman, and her response was to be a wolf. And what did she do? She has, as a first year, as a rookie, she's become the fastest player in the WNBA to reach 500 points and 200 assists. So good for her. She showed that she wasn't going to back down from all that and played like a wolf. So I think that's cool. My other one is this picture behind me. I just think it's amazing that somebody actually paid $24+ million for a jersey that Babe Ruth wore in game 3 of the 1932 World Series against the Cubs, in which he allegedly called his home run shot, which has now been sort of debunked. But I mean, who pays $24 million for a jersey? That's just nuts.
We really don't know
who did it either, because it was a private auction. I mean, it's was confidential.
Come out, doesn't it?
It'll come out eventually, but my God, $24 million to have a jersey in a case hanging in your house somewhere. Maybe your house. I don't know. Maybe it's a museum. I don't know. It's just crazy.
I got staying on baseball, I've got a buzzer that I think what we're witnessing this year is as good, if not better, than the Maguire-Sosa year. I know how exciting that was, and I know that was fueled by steroids, but if people don't appreciate what is happening right now, Shohei Ohtani may very well be a 50-50 guy. That 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases is insanity. And while that's happening, Aaron Judge is probably going to beat his own record of American League record for home runs. He got 50 this weekend. There's still, I don't know.
Third time in his career he's hit 50 home runs, which is rare air.
I think he gets to 63. So you could have two massive records. And by the way, if you look at the numbers for Kansas City Royals shortstop Bobby Witt Jr. in any year. In any year, he would be a runaway MVP. The fact that he's going to
unbelievable. Yeah.
The fact that he's going to be a distant second place to Judge shows what incredibly special year this is. I really think that if MLB and the networks can harness all of this and get more like round the clock coverage when these records start to get close to be broken for Ohtani and Judge, it would be even better for baseball. It's really fun to watch.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Pretty cool. Milk, you got a buzzer beater?
Yeah.
Billy Napier?
All right, I'm going to give you two. Don't look now, but Formula One really is getting interesting with a win yesterday by Lando Norris at the Hungarian, right? The Hungarian Grand Prix?
No.
It was the Dutch.
The Dutch, right? Hungarian was the week before. This was the Dutch, or right before the season, I guess, the summer break. But McLaren has the fastest car. I mean, that's where we are right now. They have the best car, and it's still 70 points between him and Verstappen, which is a lot to close the gap because Verstappen did come in second. So
he came in fourth.
No, he came in second yesterday, and that's only an 8-point swing. And Charles Leclerc came in third. But so it's going to be tough to close that gap because, you know, Red Bull is competitive, at least Verstappen is. But watch the constructors. That is going to be really close down to the wire, in part because McLaren has two drivers who are finishing top five most weeks. And you know, Perez has not been great lately. He had a little bit of a better weekend than he has recently. So maybe that, maybe that'll work out for him. But it's going to be down to the wire, I think, at least on the constructors.
Bison, I saw a stat that if Lando wins the remaining races and the two sprint races, and even if Verstappen comes in second for all the remaining races, if that were to be what played out yesterday, Lando would win the title, the driver title, by 1 point.
Well, and guess where that 1 point might have come from? He got fastest lap yesterday on his last lap of the race. So that could be an important point that he picked up there. So keep an eye on that. It's the season started out, you thought it was over, and it's definitely not. And then the other buzzer beater, I am walking off of this podcast tonight and walking across the street to see the number two prospect in all of baseball make his major league debut, Dylan Cruz, who the Nats took second. Remember last year, you had Skeens from LSU go one, Cruz from LSU also go two. And we've already called up Robert Wood this year. James Wood, whatever his name is. And he's just crushing it. He has been on fire since he came up. And tonight we have Cruz. And to add a little intrigue, it's Juan Soto back in D.C. The chance to come home Juan at the end of the season when he's a free agent are going to be in full effect tonight. So
are you bringing a change of underwear?
Oh, yeah.
How are you going to contain yourself? I mean,
seriously.
Yeah. So that's it. Any other buzzers?
I'm not sitting near you.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. one or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay, and he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.